Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. And if you're a Manchester United fan, or indeed, if you're Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ollie, if you're listening, you can relax, you can breathe again, because it was Ronnie to the rescue in Bergamo, as just at the very moment when the P45 looked to be landing on Ole's desk for about the millionth time this month, his Portuguese superstar popped up with another late European goal. Two goals on the night for Ronaldo, but the important thing for Ole is just 1 point. United drawing 2-2 away at Atalanta. We'll be picking the bones out of that one in part one and asking the question, what next for Ole and United ahead of the Manchester derby this weekend? Alongside that, we'll also be reviewing Chelsea's win. They got a 1-0 victory away at Malmo as the defending champions look to take another step closer to the last 16. That's all to come in part one of the podcast. And then after the break, we'll be previewing tonight's Champions League action. Two more Premier League teams going into battle. Liverpool and Manchester City both in action. The Reds host Atletico Madrid at Anfield in the latest episode of Jurgen versus Diego. And City welcome Belgian side Club Brugge to the Etihad as Pep looks to keep up the pressure on PSG. Right then, plenty to get stuck into on today's show. My name's Fergal Brennan, and alongside me this morning, stretching out his midweek muscles, we have Niall McCaughan. Niall, how are you doing?
Very well, Fergal. Good morning. Good to speak to you again. Looking forward to this. Some good games to talk about, both last night and tonight taking place. So yeah, it should be a good show.
Great stuff. And obviously alongside Niall, someone who is as regular on a Wednesday as a Cristiano Ronaldo European goal, Mr. Ian Brannan. Ian, how are you doing?
Yeah, in respect that I didn't turn up last week but did this. Yeah, very much like Cristiano, absolutely.
Exactly, the parallels between you and Ronaldo just keep running. Just absolute masters of your art. Right, United, Niall, I'm going to go to you first on this in terms of performance last night. I was thinking before we started recording that we could start saving some time and just copy and paste audio when it comes to reviewing Manchester United's Champions League performances. Low-key, little enthusiasm, lack of a plan, and then bang, Ronaldo pops up and saves the day. I am kind of joking, half joking, based on the performance last night. 2-2 away at Atalanta, 2 for Ronaldo, including one right at the death to snatch a point. But based on the performance, Ronaldo's goals aside, is that a pretty fair assessment of United's performance in Italy last night?
I think so. I think that we all know how good Cristiano Ronaldo is. I think that makes him the oldest player to score a Champions League goal for Manchester United. He's obviously the record goal scorer in the competition in general when it comes to the history of the Champions League. And that goal means he scored in 4 successive Champions League group games for Manchester United. Basically, he scored in all of the group games. And I think, what is it, of his 11 goals this season that he's got for Manchester United, 9 of them have been decisive. And sorry for the stats overload at the start there, but I think that last one is absolutely crucial. 9 of his 11 goals goals this season have been game-defining. And by that, I mean they've either been a winner or an equaliser. So it just goes to show how important he is to Manchester United. And people say that Cristiano Ronaldo has been a hindrance to United. And I understand that in some respects in terms of systems and styles of play and what he offers from a more technical perspective when it comes to things like putting the pressure on, closing down defenders, winning the ball up high up in on the pitch. Those sorts of things are not things you traditionally associate with Cristiano Ronaldo. But what you do associate with him is scoring unbelievable goals. And he scored a brilliant volley to win it last night. A really smart finish at the end of the first half after great work from Fernandes with the back heel. And it just feels like Cristiano Ronaldo, everyone is pinpointing him as a problem in terms of the way United are playing with systems and styles of play within a game and patterns of play. Everyone is pointing towards Cristiano as if to say, you are the issue because you are 36 years old. We should be building a team around younger players rather than someone who turns 37 in February. But despite the fact some think that he causes problems, he also solves the same problems as well by scoring goals late on. And that's the remarkable thing you find here. So I'd be in agreement with you, Fergal. I don't think Manchester United's performance was vintage by any stretch. It wasn't as good as Spurs. It was definitely better than Liverpool. But again, it's almost like sometimes you watch Manchester United and you wonder what side is going to turn up. Is it going to be the side that sweeps aside Spurs? Is it going to be the side that gets demolished by Liverpool? I think last night you found it was somewhere in the middle. Quality talent on the pitch. Naturally, you're going to get results and you're going to score goals with players of that ilk. Cavani, Fernandes, Greenwood, these sorts of players are all capable. However, in terms of putting together a plan, it didn't go to plan for Manchester United. They would have wanted to win, but they can't turn their nose up a draw away from home in the Champions League. It keeps them top of the group, and I suppose in terms of results, that is what Manchester United are looking for right now.
Looking at the performance, and again, we talk about consistency when it comes to Manchester United, Ian, and looking at the results so far this season, they've only won back-to-back games once, and that's right at the start of the campaign, beating Wolves away and then winning 4-1 at home to Newcastle. From the sunlit uplands of beating Spurs 3-0 at the weekend, where it did look finally as if things could be clicking in certain areas of the pitch, change of system to a back three or back five, depending on which way you look at it, Cavani, Ronaldo up top. Then last night he makes three changes, brings Cavani out of the team, brings Marcus Rashford in, brings Paul Pogba in, Eric Bailly at the back, who I have to say did play really, really well last night. It does still play into this idea that there's a lack of a plan, or at least to maybe give Ollie a bit of credit, that he's trying to formulate a plan, but it's just not working. I don't think that he's sending these players out just willy-nilly, go out, do your stuff, and get it to Ronaldo and he'll win it for us. But there just seems to be such a woeful gap between maybe what he's trying to do, maybe what he thinks he's doing, and what is actually being shown on the pitch. And that was just right up in the headlights last night.
The biggest problem that I think Manchester United have got, and all the focus, of course, is on attacking options and Ronaldo and who plays up front and all this kind of stuff. But actually, the concern, to me, is clearly at the back, because Manchester United have leaked 23 goals this season so far. Now, for a team like Manchester United, that ain't good. Only Norwich and Leicester have let in more goals this season in all competitions. And yes, Manchester United are playing in more competitions than those clubs at the minute with the Champions League. But it just goes to show where the problem is for me. Because we know that they've got firepower up front. But letting goals in just cancels everything out, doesn't it? You know, there's no point having fantastic strikers on the pitch if you've got a defence like a sieve, where you're letting in, you know, nearly as many goals as the team who are bottom of the Premier League. That's how bad the situation at the back is for Manchester United. And I know they've got problems with people like Varane obviously being injured, and so they're not working on their plan A, but they need to have at least some kind of solid defensive partnership. And there seems to be a lot of change at the back, which can't help matters. And it just seems to be that indecision. He doesn't seem to know what to do with that. Obviously, he knows what to do up front. He's an embarrassment of riches up front. But until they sort the situation at the back out, then they're going to have problems. You know, it's almost crying out for Big Sam to come in and just to sort of tighten things up slightly. Maybe not quite that bad.
Be careful. Like, we're in Halloween country at the moment. You say Big Sam into a mirror three times and
Big Sam to the end of the season. Big Sam till the end of the season at Man United.
If
there we go.
If you go into the bathroom now and you say his name three times into the mirror, a pint of wine just comes through the bathroom window. You have to be very careful. You have to tread very carefully when it comes to Sam Allardyce. Around this time of year, he's on the hunt. On the hunt. You have to be very, very careful.
Well, you know, I'm keeping my eyes peeled, by the way, because I'm a member of the gym where at the hotel where Sam Allardyce lives, if he's in the northeast. So if there's any, I know that the Newcastle a lot of Newcastle players live very close to there. So I'm always keeping my eyes peeled to see if Big Sam is relaxing on a sun lounger in the spa in the hotel, just in case, because that's where he'll be come the day. Obviously, they haven't got a solution permanently yet at Newcastle. I'm just keeping my eyes peeled. When it happens, you'll be the first to hear about it.
I think the most impressive thing about that is you've managed to get the words sun lounger and northeast in the same sentence. You've done well there. I don't know how you've managed it.
Well, yeah, but they're indoors.
Of course.
Everything about that sentence was absolutely terrifying. The thought of Sam Allardyce on a sun lounger, yeah, everything. I'm just gonna push that to the back of my mind. And Newcastle fans, I'd advise you to do exactly the same.
Yeah.
Niall, for me, watching this game last night, this was an example of a team with a plan, really, really well coached and well drilled by Gianpiero Gasperini. And a team, again, it does feel like a bit of a pile on with with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but a team that didn't have a plan. And there was a few key moments within the game that really demonstrated that. Right from the get-go, the first 45, Atalanta were excellent. They played on United's weaknesses. They knew they weren't familiar with this back three. Duvan Zapata up top was excellent the whole night. He managed to dominate three centre-backs when United normally just have two. And then in the second half, United equalised in added time before the break, then looked to gain a bit of momentum after the break. Gasperini reacted with two things. He brought Martin Deroon into the middle to man-mark Bruno Fernandes, who was probably, Ronaldo aside, United's best player on the night. And he just managed the game. Every change that Solskjaer made, Gasperini was one step ahead of him. Every tweak that Solskjaer did look to kind of vainly try and impact on the game, Gasperini was already ahead of him. And in reality, we know, obviously, Ronaldo popping up with these goals. Atalanta, the way that they played, the chances they created, they deserve to win. And that's just a demonstration of a coach that has got his players coached to within an inch of their life. And with United, where it's just a case of your talent will get you through and let's just try and get a result.
Yeah, there's no doubt about Atalanta and how well drilled they are. I mean, I just think you need to look at the last three seasons in Serie A to see evidence of that. And obviously, I think their first season in the Champions League was only three seasons ago, and everyone knows just how good they can be. They always score goals. There's very rarely a game in which they don't score. They're very rarely beaten to nil, if that makes sense. You know, if you look at some of the recent fixtures, you know, at the weekend, they had to come from behind, I think. They drew 2-2 at Lazio. They scored 3 against Sampdoria. They drew with Udinese, you know, 2 against Manchester United 2 weeks ago. And before that, they had scored 4 in their last league game. So in terms of scoring goals, that's definitely something that they're capable of. And as you say, Gianpiero Gasperini has got them extremely well drilled. Everyone knows their system. They play 3 at the back as well with wing-backs, but it's more of a 3-4-3 system. And like you say, I mean, Zapata just bullied United's defence at times, didn't he? He was running them around, dragging them out of position. And I guess that's the benefit of playing three up front, is that you can latch on to the three defending centre-backs. And I guess with United having changed the system 2-3 at the back, it's something that they've not played very often. And obviously they worked on it in the 6 days post-Liverpool, and it worked to a T, really, against Spurs in terms of the result. But maybe Atalanta would have favoured that, a three at the back system. And in terms of the substitutions, I think you're probably right as well. But it's a position Gianpiero Gasperini has been in on a number of occasions, because he knows the system quite well. Maybe Solskjaer's substitutions were slightly with a lean towards the 4-2-3-1 system that he's favoured. And, you know, you have to change your mindset, I think, in terms of understanding a system. Now, if it's something that Solskjaer has only been working on for 6 days and extremely sporadically before that, then you probably have to pardon him slightly in terms of the substitutions. But for me, it was the depth on the bench, or the lack thereof, which was of concern for Manchester United when it comes to alterations, especially when Varane got injured. Varane picked up a knock, came off, looks like he's a doubt for the Manchester derby at the weekend, which is huge, particularly with the form Maguire's in and the defensive issues that Ian's already highlighted. But if you look amongst the substitutes, I was reading them out, to someone I was watching the game with last night, and they were just saying back at me, attacking player, midfielder, midfielder, attacking player, fullback. There was just no other centre-half options on the bench. Now, Eric Bailly, we know, has got a history with injury. Raphael Varane might not have even been fit to play last night. Harry Maguire, we know, has been suffering both in form and with fitness recently. Phil Jones is still out on the sidelines. But then you're looking at younger players like Tede Mengi and players like that, of which a fair few of them are out on loan. Axel Tuanzebe is out on loan. Now, most people would say four centre-halves is a good number to have in your squad. But if you're playing three at the back, you probably need six, just in case. And Luke Shaw could play in a back three, did it last season against PSG. Nemanja Matic could probably play at centre-back. Scott McTominay does it for Scotland. But yet, instead of making those decisions, he decided to go for a back four and go back to the type formation of 4-2-3-1. And actually, I think that it was probably the only option that Solskjaer had. And like I say, reverted to type, and he probably was vindicated just by the fact Ronaldo got the result. But it papers over a few cracks, I think it's fair to say. And United can't keep leaving themselves in that situation. They've got a brilliant habit of coming from behind. They've done it on a number of times in the last 18 months. But it's got to run out soon. You know, the steam has got to run out soon. And I think United, as a club and as a fan base, would be quite happy to win games more comfortably. But that's no disrespect to Atalanta. I think you're right. Gasperini deserves credit, and he's a very, very good coach.
Looking ahead, obviously, to the weekend, attention now, Ian, for Manchester United is going to turn to the Manchester derby. This is game six of this constantly mentioned six-game streak that Solskjaer's future would be assessed in. It is going to be difficult. Manchester City go into it in really good form, and we mentioned there some of the some of the injuries, some of the possible situations. Goals for Ilic and Zapata last night, both of them demonstrated this issue or uncomfortableness that United have at the back. Varane, Lindelof, both potentially might be out for this weekend, and Manchester United have made a habit in the last few weeks of former players coming out and kind of prophesying what's going to happen at the weekend. Paul Scholes obviously did it in the previous game against Atlanta ahead of Liverpool. Manchester United go out and get battered, just as Scholes said. And Paul Scholes took a break last night. I think he was maybe just snacking on his daughter's feet again. And Rio Ferdinand took over. I don't know if he enjoys biting people's feet, but we don't know about that. And he pretty much said, almost word for word, what Scholes said before the Liverpool game. He said, if United go out with that performance against Manchester City, they'll get slapped. 3, 4, 5 goals, no intensity. You look at it, you've no idea what what formation they're playing. It's an absolute disarray. Ronaldo saved them yet again, and United were fortunate that Atalanta didn't score more and that Ronaldo stepped up. Obviously, it's almost like a rinse and repeat of what Scholes said after the last Atalanta game. Is that still the position? United are just as vulnerable as they were ahead of the Liverpool game to go out against City this weekend and just get turned over?
Yeah, I don't think a right lot's changed based on last night. I mean, you know, they got away with one. It's right. And even Paul Merson said it. And if Paul Merson's saying it, then, you know, you've got to stand back and take note, because, you know, he said that Cristiano Ronaldo's performance there, and don't forget, this was just two shots that he had that went in the net, paper over the cracks of what's going on at Manchester United. And that what's going on, as you say, lack of intensity, lack of organisation, and probably a lack of concentration as well. And that's probably not helping with the goals that are going in, and just disarray at the back. All of these things are just contributing together to leave Man United where they are at the moment. And it's, you know, and we've seen this similar sort of thing happen at other clubs like Barcelona, where they've got the pressure on there. And look what's happened there. They've got rid of the manager. You know, Ole has to be on borrowed time. The Man United fans are not going to give him all season playing like this, because if they play like this all season, they're going to end up in some kind of mid-table obscurity at best. And they can't afford that. You know, they need to be in the Champions League, especially with other teams now that have got designs on taking those places. So they need to get a grip one way or the other. Manchester City are a well-oiled machine, as we know. Might not be sitting completely at the top of the table this time round so far, but they've got more organisation and more discipline and a game plan that you know what they're going to do. That's the thing with Man City. You know what they're going to do, exactly what they're going to do, but they can't keep up with it.
That's exactly it, Ian, because you don't know what Manchester United are going to do. And that's, I think, the key of point of what you're making, because, yeah, well, it's one of those things, isn't it, Fergal, where United could turn up against City this weekend at Old Trafford and do them, turn them over. And people will go, fair enough. They've got Ronaldo, they've got Cavani, they've got Rashford, they've got Greenwood, they've got Fernandes. Of course they can turn them over. They're a great team. And then, equally, they could get beat 5-0, exactly like what happened against Liverpool. And no one's surprised either, because they've seen it coming. And that's this Jekyll and Hyde nature that Manchester United have got at the moment. It's so hard to predict going into any game, including last night against Atalanta, exactly what they're going to do. And I suppose that is a problem.
It is the fact that you know that Man City are going to be really disciplined, really intense, and have this game plan that they're going to stick to, and they are going to overrun Man United because they haven't got any of those things. They're just going to leave gaps open. They're going to get overrun. But as you say, you know, if it all relies, Man United's situation all relies on Bruno Fernandes or Cavani or Ronaldo having a worldie to bail them out. And if they don't have a worldie, they'll lose. Simple as that, I think.
In fairness, it seems every weekend or every Manchester United game, we're talking about it being make or break for Ole. But again, we find ourselves in this situation. It's going to be a massive one this weekend in the Manchester derby. Right, we're going to flick across to the other Premier League team in action last night. Malmo 0, Chelsea 1. Niall, Thomas Tuchel's side, defending Champions League winners. They're on the brink of qualifying for the last 16. Not quite there just yet, but this was pretty routine in the end for Chelsea. They did make maybe heavy lifting or difficulty of it in Sweden. Loads of chances, 12 shots on target, but just the one goal. And as this game wore on, all the cliches started coming out. Malmo, if they get a set piece. Malmo, if they catch them on the break. And they never really threatened. They didn't even have a shot on target inside the 90 minutes. But Chelsea not being able to get that second goal did dominate the narrative of the second period.
Yeah, I mean, the report I read on this game, I've only seen the highlights, admittedly, because I was focused on the Manchester United game. The report I read, the headline was, Ziyech leads Chelsea cruise in Sweden. And obviously, Hakim Ziyech was the goal scorer. And I think, as you've quite nicely set up there, Chelsea did pretty much cruise to victory, despite the fact they only scored the one goal. But, you know, 1-0 is a precarious scoreline. I mean, we talk about football cliches and, you know, how regularly they get wheeled out. But it's true, isn't it? You know, it just does take a bad refereeing decision and then all of a sudden Malmo have a result. And actually, anything but a win might have been a real concern for Chelsea when it comes to the Champions League, because of course they're not top of the group. That honour is bestowed to Juventus at the moment, who of course beat Zenit St. Petersburg in the other game in that pool. So in all fairness to Chelsea, a win was of paramount importance, and I don't think that Thomas Tuchel cares how it comes, because obviously Chelsea have still got to play Juventus as well for a second time in this group in the next few weeks. So good win for them. And I think in terms of what they don't have, because of course Lukaku got injured in the reverse fixture 2 weeks ago at Stamford Bridge, he came off and he's got, I think, ankle trouble, which will keep him out for about 5 to 6 weeks, so we won't see him until after the international break. Timo Werner, the same, a player who's out injured at the moment, came off in the very same game. So actually, I think Kai Havertz has been playing through the middle in the one up front for Thomas Tuchel in the system that they've been playing recently. Mason Mount, of course, scored a hat-trick against Norwich. But it's those teams that I'm talking about in terms of a run of fixtures. Norwich City, Malmö, they had Southampton in the League Cup. I might be right in thinking they had Newcastle at the weekend, and I'm not sure who they've got this weekend, but I don't think it's too taxing a test Burnley. For them. So actually, in terms of having a Burnley, okay, there we go. So in terms of having a period of fixtures where your two main strikers are out, it's not the worst run of games for Chelsea. And as you rightly say, they created enough chances to win the game by more than a goal. So that will please Thomas Tuchel. And I think the 3 points was the most important thing for the Blues, especially in the context of the group when it comes to qualification. As you say, they're almost over the line, not quite there yet. Still yet to play Juventus. But as you say, Burnley at the weekend, some pretty favourable fixtures when you've got two key injuries to your forward players. And we know how Hakim Ziyech is able in front of goal. Kai Havertz too. Mason Mount has found a goal scoring touch in recent times. So they've got goals pretty much all over the park. I mean, Ben Chilwell's been scoring goals from fullback in recent games. You know, he's found this new goal scoring form, which nobody knew he had within him. So definitely a sign of a good team, as the old cliche goes, to wheel out another one, is that if you've got goals all over the pitch, you're going to be all right. And I think Chelsea will be all right, both in the Champions League and up to the international break after this weekend as well, because it looks like after that break in the Premier League season, they could have Lukaku and Werner much closer to full fitness, which will be a boost for them for sure.
Ian, Niall and I are just pretenders to the throne because the real cliche king, Joe Cole, said it last night after the game. he just basically said that, admitted, which is always nice, like a bit of an insight into the inside track of how top-level football works, where he rolled them all out, all the cliches, got the job done, you know, get back on the plane, get back home, 3 points in a bag, blah, blah, blah. But he's right. Like, there's very little way to dress this up. This is exactly what it is. It does exactly what it says on the tin. There's another cliche for you, which is, this is not a massively difficult place to go. You're absolutely expected to win. There's no good way to win. You win by three or four, you know, you should have won by more. You win by one, you're criticised for not taking your chances. Chelsea, Thomas Tuchel won't really care. And you look at their record. I know this sounds mad for a team that are top of the Premier League, on the verge of the last 16 in the Champions League. They've obviously gone through in the Carabao Cup. They've won the last 7 games in a row. They haven't lost since that back-to-back with City and Juventus. But we're still maybe asking questions of them. Maybe that's because of the injuries, or maybe that's because of performances last night where they're not steamrolling teams. But there's nobody right now as consistent as Chelsea.
Well, yeah, I think we talked about this a few weeks back, as I recall, about how, you know, for teams like Malmo, obviously they're bottom of this group, but they're in the Champions League, and for them it's a big deal because they don't qualify for the Champions League every year. I don't even know if they've qualified for the Champions League in the past at all. So for them to play against Chelsea on their home ground, it is a big deal. For some of these players, they'll never play in a bigger match, and you are going to have some resistance, you know, unfortunately for the big teams, because these players are putting everything into to having a good performance against one of the world's top sides, which Chelsea currently are. So these are very rarely walkovers because everybody's giving their all. They don't want to get walked over. They want to have a good battle. It's something to tell their grandkids probably one day for some of these players. Chelsea have a very strong defence. A better defence than I think any other team in Europe at the moment. So it's obviously no surprise that they've kept themselves a clean sheet there, and that's got to be good and reassuring for that. And obviously Thomas Tuchel's worked very hard on their defence. Up front, they're not with their first choice strikers, Lukaku and Werner, as we know, out. Mason Mount not recovered from his illness, so they didn't have the full firepower up front. But as you say, getting the job done, that's what it's about. They were never going to probably get turned over, particularly by Malmo, who have struggled to really score in the competition at all so far, let alone against one of the toughest defences in the Champions League at the moment. But it's about getting the points on the board. And for some of the players as well, why risk, you know, getting yourself injured or really going for it when you don't need to? You know, if you've got the goal and they're quite comfortable, that's what it's all about at this stage. You know, you don't get any extra points for scoring more goals. And yeah, as you say, it is a routine win, probably not one that they were particularly concerned about. Never going to be an easy one either. Not an easy place to go. But especially when the side that you're playing against are giving their all. It's their cup final. To give you a pun, it's like their cup final, sick as a parrot, game of two halves.
I tell you what, though, I'm quite pleased every time I tune into a Champions League game or a European game and I see a former Premier League player as a manager of a European club. So to see Yondal Thomason on the sidelines brought me back to Des Lynam presenting the Premiership on ITV with Beautiful Day by U2 as the intro music. So I enjoyed that very much to see him, and glad to see him managing a club like Malmo who are doing
well.
Yeah,
I think that the one thing that we're all missing sincerely in British football at the moment is Andy Townsend's tactics truck. That was a big thing that revolutionised football in that era. And RIP it.
I'm just waiting for Patrick Berger to turn up as the manager of like Victoria Pilsen or something like that. I'm waiting to see these former Premier League players that I used to love when I was younger managing clubs.
Yeah.
And Yondal Thomason, who I spent most of the game looking at last night and thinking, who does he remind me of? And obviously, Magpies legend, striker in the Premier League. Do you not think he looks a bit like Brian O'Driscoll? I was looking at him last night and thinking, who are you? And then they were like, how did Brian O'Driscoll get this job? And then I realised, no, it's John Bell
Thompson.
He does
Thompson. A little
bit. But, you know, he is doing well. That's what retirement does to us all. You know, we pack on the pounds and we end up looking a bit like a rugby player. Guys, I'm very proud. We've given Joe Cole a bit of a run for his money. We've given the cliché dictionary an absolute battering in part one. So we're going to take a quick break, let the clichés have a rest. Bit of housekeeping before we do take a break in the Champions League. Two sides are already qualified. Juventus have qualified top of Chelsea's group, 12 points from 12, and Bayern Munich, 12 points from 12. They're already in the hat for the last 16. After the break, we're going to be talking about Liverpool and Manchester City, who are bidding to join them, Diego against Jurgen and Pep against Bruges. We're going to be getting stuck into all of that in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily, and we are firmly in Champions League mood. But as a quick reminder, we are your daily Premier League podcast, the only podcast with a brand new show every 24 hours. If you click subscribe on this episode, you can get a brand new show as soon as it is ready. Right, before the break, it was reviews. Manchester United 2-2 against Atalanta and Chelsea 1-0 against Malmo. Niall, we're going to move across to tonight's games, Liverpool at home to Atletico Madrid. And based on the first leg 2 weeks ago, 3-2 at the Wanda Metropolitana in Madrid, this could be, should be, hopefully will be, an absolute cracker. That was a brilliant game. I honestly think it was the best game in terms of entertainment that I've watched so far this season. Anfield, we all know, has got this wonderful reputation for special European nights. This, hopefully, if all goes well, is set up to be an absolute blockbuster.
Yeah, this one's teed up to be really exciting, isn't it? I think as well the beef between the two managers that seems to have cropped up as well in recent weeks seems to have also added a little bit of spice to that as well. But listen, two sides who have been really successful in the last 5 or 6 years under managers who have basically been at the forefront of that. Diego Simeone, someone who's earned plenty of plaudits for how he's turned Atletico Madrid not only into a Spanish powerhouse but a European powerhouse. Of course, the defending La Liga champions against Liverpool, who 5-6 years ago, I think it's 6 years now, isn't it, almost on the nose since Jurgen Klopp took over, just over 6 years, you know, he's turned them from a side who was struggling to qualify for the Europa League after they had been so close to winning the league under Brendan Rodgers. They made the change, brought in Jurgen Klopp. And in the 5 years, 6 years he's been there, he's transformed them into a real dominating force, not just in English football, but in Europe as well. Won a Champions League, won a Premier League, so been to a couple of finals as well. So yeah, definitely looking forward to this one tonight. And the fact it's at Anfield too, it's got this reputation, hasn't it, for being a great European venue. And it's still all to play for in the group. Of course, Liverpool top with 9 points. If they win against Atletico Madrid, that makes the gap even further than it already is. It's currently 5 points, and that puts Liverpool through to the next stage of the competition. And even a draw, I think, would suffice for Liverpool. As for Atletico Madrid, they're on 4 points, as I say, but so are Porto, who play AC Milan in the other game in this group. And so, really, I don't know what your take is, gents, but I feel Atletico have to come and try and win. And I'm sure they do anyway. I'm sure they would do that anyway, regardless of the situation in the group. But it almost feels more important for them than it does for Liverpool. And Liverpool won't want to lose at home. Of course they won't. But I just think it's interesting with the jibes that have been going back and forth between the both managers, where Jurgen Klopp was saying, with the quality and the players that Diego Simeone has got, why do they play in a certain style? I don't think that's any of Jurgen Klopp's business. I think it's an opinion that he didn't need to mention, and he did so, and therefore I think that it's been met with a bit of hostility from Simeone. Understandably so, two very passionate characters in both dugouts. But I wonder whether he will change slightly, Diego Simeone, just to prove a point, whether there'll be an added enthusiasm with his players, considering they do need the win more than Liverpool do. I just wonder, with this game and the way it's set up, how things will unfold, because I'm really excited for this one. As you say, it should be a blockbuster. And there are so many different threads and strands to this game for different reasons, whether it comes to the context of the group, the issues between the two managers, the players on the pitch. So yeah, it should be a good game, definitely.
looking at Liverpool's form, Ian, when we stretch right the way back even into into last season, 15 games unbeaten so far this season, you snake that back into 2019-20, and that goes up to 25 games unbeaten across all competitions. So we mentioned before consistency with Liverpool, with Chelsea. Liverpool have mirrored that so far this season, but I look at this team and I look at the performances. I discussed this with Sam Lee on the Sunday night podcast reviewing the Brighton game. I still think they are trying to kind of out-punch, outscore opposition teams. Because you look at their record in the last few games, they conceded 3 against Brentford, conceded against Porto, 2 against City, 2 against Atletico last time out, and then 2 against Brighton at the weekend in the Premier League. So we always associate Van Dijk and Liverpool and the system with being really defensively sound. They don't give away many goals because they're so Hollywood up top with Salah and Mane and Jota or Firmino, whoever starts. But there is a bit of a concern this season that they are leaking goals and relying on those brilliant talents up top at the other end of the pitch to outscore the opposition. And strangely, for a team like Atletico, who are defensively also normally very resilient, we saw a very odd game in Madrid 2 weeks ago where both of them came out swinging digs, trying to make an impact on the game. But you don't really get the sense that that suits Liverpool, because it doesn't sit right that they're conceding this many goals.
Yeah, and it's unusual for Liverpool because, you know, as you say, they have been pretty rock solid. That was kind of their bedrock of the year that they won the Premier League, was the fact that they were firing the goals in up front and pretty hard to beat at the back, obviously with Virgil van Dijk, who, whilst he's back from injury, I don't know whether he's still affected by everything that happened over the course of last year and missing all of last season or not. But it does seem to be, you know, they do seem to be a little more frail there. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're not as weak at the back as likes of Man United and so on, but you never know. And I've got Virgil van Dijk in my fantasy Premier League team, and I can tell you that he is hit and miss in terms of what he's contributing to the games. It's kind of interesting. I've got Ronaldo in there as well, and yeah, he's been producing very little also in this last few weeks. But you know, it is interesting that he seems to have brilliant performances, but then, and it seems to be against the teams that you expect. Maybe it's a bit of complacency when they're playing against the teams that you think Liverpool are going to really do well against, like the lesser teams, if you want to call them that. Although I think, you know, what we thought of lesser teams, such as Crystal Palace, perhaps particularly in the Premier League, and maybe not quite as lesser as they were on form at the moment. But, you know, those sort of teams, they've struggled. They've seemed to have been put under more pressure than you would have imagined. And now, whether that's because the defence haven't been quite as switched on as they are in the big games or what, but it is an area that I think any team, particularly Atletico, will be looking to exploit, because you know that you can get through this defence. You're not playing against like Chelsea's defence we were talking about earlier, strongest in Europe among all of the top teams in Europe. You know, one of the hardest to break down, conceded the fewest goals. But when it comes to Liverpool, you know you've got that chance. So there's certainly going to be goals in it tonight. Because, you know, Liverpool are explosive up front. Atletico are not bad either. And Liverpool and Atletico have both got frailties at the back. It's I think it's going to be an exciting game.
Looking at in terms of lineup for Liverpool, Niall, Jurgen Klopp generally has got kind of turn of a coin decisions to make at the back and in attack. Firmino or Jota up front, and then either Konate or Matip to partner Van Dijk in the heart of their defence. But in terms of midfield, they are struggling for numbers at the moment. They've got a couple of important injuries. No Naby Keita or James Milner tonight. Naby Keita obviously got that brilliant goal away in Madrid 2 weeks ago. But they missed Fabinho in that game. He came on at half-time to replace Keita. Now Keita is out injured. Klopp has said that Fabinho and Thiago Alcantara will both be fit. Given the fact that he's been forced to kind of change his midfield unit around, he's brought in Curtis Jones. Jordan Henderson's probably been the only consistent that's played almost every game so far this season. Given the fact that this game could be won on such thin margins, and when you play against Atletico, the old saying of Diego Simeone plays with a knife between his teeth, that is still true. And you get something wrong, you get a call wrong, you get your tactics wrong, Atletico are so adept at just punishing you. How does Klopp approach this in terms of midfield? Because he can't lose the intensity battle against the Diego Simeone side, but he has to also think of the longer game of players being injured and balancing the demands of the Premier League as well.
After you said knife between the teeth, all I can think of is if there was ever a Rambo remake, it would have to be Diego Simeone filling the spot of Sly Stallone. Get the knife between the teeth, get the khaki headband on and send him into the jungle and see what comes out alive. I can guarantee you it'll probably be him. Everything else would be left in his wake. But yeah, I definitely think when it comes to Liverpool, you know, this is where the manager has to earn his coin. And Jurgen Klopp has got plenty of credit in the bank, and he tends to make the right decision in these sorts of games. Often when it comes to the Champions League, we hear criticism about Pep Guardiola, and we'll come on to City in a second, I'm sure. But Pep often gets criticised for making some interesting decisions, particularly when it comes to the Champions League in bigger games. We don't really get that vibe with Jurgen Klopp. And maybe it is the case, and maybe it's just a stigma that Pep's got and Jurgen Klopp doesn't. But it certainly feels like when it comes to these big crunch encounters, Jurgen Klopp does tend to make the right decision. But as you rightly say, Fabinho and Thiago Alcantara have both been out injured recently. And so it will be a risk just to throw them into a game of this intensity and this pressure straight from the off. And I think that he would rather play the same team that faced Brighton. Obviously Keita's therefore got a bit of an injury since then, but I mean Curtis Jones, Jordan Henderson, Keita was the midfield three in that game against Brighton, which finished 2-2 at the weekend. You know, does he throw Fabinho in there? Does he have much of a choice other than to throw Fabinho in there, I suppose, is the question. I think he's one of Liverpool's better players when he plays, and I think Fabinho, Jordan Henderson and Curtis Jones is actually a midfield which is more than capable of putting a stop to Atletico in the middle of the park, for sure. So definitely decisions to be made. I like the question you asked about the centre halves as well. I mean, Ibrahima Konate, I think, came in against Manchester United, which surprised many, a fan and a pundit alike. So, you know, he's someone who's been signed in the summer and has been good foil to Van Dijk in the last couple of games, I felt as well. I think Joel Matip doesn't get enough credit in terms of how good a player he actually is. I think the issue that Liverpool have found is that of the quality they've got and the players they've got, they have a lot of players who aren't particularly robust. Joel Matip's one of them, tends to get injured a lot. Naby Keita's always injured. You know, I don't know what the guy's made of paper mache or something. You know, he's always on the treatment table. So those are problems that Liverpool do have when it comes to injuries. And whether that's a problem with, you know, training techniques and regimes, I mean, who am I to question Jurgen Klopp, who, you know, whose Liverpool team have been outstanding in the last 3 or 4 years? But certainly it's a question mark, isn't it? It's unfortunate, really, but when they do get injuries, they tend to be either players that get them regularly or long-term ones. So certainly that's a conundrum that Jurgen Klopp will need to solve. I don't think he's really got much of a choice. It'd be a risk to throw Fabinho or Thiago straight into the midfield, but as you say, with the options they've got on the bench, it's either that or you put Oxlade-Chamberlain in. And will he be favoured over a returning Fabinho or a returning Thiago? I'm not so sure. So yeah, definitely agree with that. And the midfield three is what I'm most interested to see in terms of how Liverpool line up tonight.
One little subplot ahead of the game is Luis Suarez, Ian. Obviously, he's been back to Anfield as a Barcelona player, that famous 4-0 win for Liverpool that saw them overhaul Barcelona and go on and eventually win the Champions League. He has a little bit of maybe a fractured relationship with the Liverpool fan base, and there's been contrasting comments coming out from people connected to the club in the last few days. Jordan Henderson, Liverpool captain, has been quite statesmanlike, praised Suarez, the impact he had on him personally, and just how fantastic he was during his time at Liverpool. He came on as a late substitute in the reverse fixture 2 weeks ago, didn't really have an impact, but we all know with Suarez it's a dangerous game to underestimate him. He's been brilliant in La Liga so far this season, 6 goals, broke 20 again last season as they won the title. And then on the flip side of it, you've got John Aldridge, bit of a cult icon within Liverpool fans, and he's taken to his column in the Liverpool Echo to absolutely slate Suarez for his behaviour in that game where he tried to injure Andy Robertson and some of his usual Suarez carry on. And he's essentially said that the Liverpool fans will give him a bad reception tonight at Anfield and that he believes that Suarez deserves it. Do you think, based on what he did at Liverpool, the performances that he turned in, he deserves that? And where do you think the Liverpool fans stand on this? Because Suarez is rightfully a very divisive figure for various justified reasons. Where do you think the Liverpool fans fall on this one with Suarez?
I don't know. I think it's probably a bit of a mix. I think you'll have some people who quite like the opportunity to give him some abuse, and there'll be some that remember actually what he did for them when he did play for them, because he was a tremendous player at his peak at Liverpool, and has gone on to be continue to be a great player in world football. It's always hard to know with Liverpool exactly what kind of reception that some of the players are going to get. Usually they get a fairly a fairly nice reception, don't they? And usually ex-legends and stuff are welcomed back and applauded and all that. Maybe it might not be for Suarez, but do you know what? I don't think he'll care. I really don't think he'll care what John Aldridge thinks or what any of the Liverpool fans think. And when you see some of the interviews with, particularly with South American footballers, they get way, way, way worse abuse in their home countries than anything that will be thrown at them at Anfield tonight. I can guarantee it. It just bounces off them. They don't care. And actually, they quite like it. They like the hostility. It fires them up. It's what they grow up in. They grow up in hostile environments, the South American footballers. So honestly, it'll take some going for them to, and it'll fire them up. And you know what? He'll end up scoring, won't he? And it'll just rub it in even more, and it'll all kick off. And John Aldridge will have to do another column.
He'll rub it in John Aldridge's face. Quick little bit of trivia I'm going to ask you both before we get you to call the results on this. Niall, go to you first, and then Ian. 4 seasons at the club each for John Aldridge and for Luis Suarez. Aldridge from 1986 to 1990. Suarez, obviously, 2010 to 2014. Who scored more goals for Liverpool, John Aldridge or Luis Suarez?
I'll be honest, I can't really remember as far back as John Aldridge because I wasn't born yet, and there isn't a great deal of YouTube highlights for me to scrub up on. So I'm just going to say Suarez just because I remember him, and he scored about a billion hat-tricks against Norwich in his time at Anfield. So I'm going with Luis Suarez.
What was the question again? Who scored the most goals, what, in Europe? Or
Who scored more goals? They both had 4 seasons at Liverpool, Aldridge and Suarez. Who scored more goals for the Reds?
Well, you see, at that time, be about 1987 or so, wouldn't it? I was young lad at school, and I did go through a brief phase of glory supporting Liverpool when they were actually quite good the last time. That's how long ago it is. And drawing myself on a moustache, I seem to remember, with my mum's eyeliner pencil.
Who were you? Souness?
I was either John Aldridge or Ian Rush. It could have worked either way.
Yeah. Rush, Souness, or Aldridge, yeah, could be any of them.
Any of them. I would go with Aldridge. He was pretty prolific at the time.
No, you're wrong. Niall, you were right. Yeah, maybe a little bit of recency bias, but yes, Suarez, 82 in 133, and Aldridge, 63 in 104. And as a separate little slap in the face for John Aldridge, not only did he outscore Aldridge, he outscored him in every single competition: FA Cup, Premier League, League Cup, and Europe. So there's no real doubting of Suarez's record at Liverpool. Right, before we move on to Manchester City against Bruges, Niall, again, we'll go to you first. Call this for us. Should be a thriller. A win would put Liverpool in the last 16. Give us your prediction.
I'm going to sit firmly on the fence and go 2-2. I'm just wishing that question you asked was, how many players did John Aldridge bite during his time at Liverpool? And it would have been a much easier answer.
That'd be a quicker competition. Ian, Niall's going for another bit high-scoring game and a 2-2 draw. Give us your shout.
I'm going to go for a high-scoring game, but I'm going to go for like 3-1 to Liverpool. I think, having said what we've said about the defence, but I think Mo Salah being on the form he is at the minute, I can see him getting a couple at least.
Okay, fair enough. Goals, whichever way it goes down tonight. The other game involving a Premier League side this evening, Niall, is Manchester City up against Club Bruges. Comfortable for them in the reverse fixture 2 weeks ago. 5-1 win away in Belgium. Tables are turned tonight at the Etihad. And Pep has been very non-Pep in the last few weeks. Well, I'm a bit worried about him because he's not making a ridiculous amount of changes to his team. In the Premier League and in the Champions League, he's made just one change in the last 3 games. Obviously, rafter swaps for the Carabao Cup defeat to West Ham. This is unusual. All jokes aside, we know that the stuff about playing Edison up front is just a bit of a mess. But given the fact that Pep normally, around this time, starts to get itchy feet, starts to change things, starts to switch things around, he does seem to be quite comfortable. And despite bowing out of the Carabao Cup to West Ham, they do look just as good as ever.
Yeah, I mean, if they play the way they did in the reverse fixture against Club Bruges, then they'll have no problems. I mean, I think most City fans I spoke to or heard from suggested that performance against Club Bruges 2 weeks ago was one of the best displays they've seen under Pep Guardiola in the 5 years he's been at the club, which is remarkable to think the amount of times Manchester City have played well, the amount of great players that they've had come through the doors of the Etihad and now move on, to suggest that that Champions League group stage game against Club Brugge, I think they won 5-0, didn't they, was the best game that they've seen. It just says a lot, I think, about how City are playing in this current formation. I think that they're really starting to hammer it home now and really starting to nail it down in terms of a style of play in this particular system with the new players that have come in the summer. I mean, you say that you're a bit concerned about Pep because he's not being very Pep-like. Well, actually, maybe on the field that's the case, but off the field, he's been up to his old tricks again. He said in his pre-match press conference ahead of this game that this Champions League group stage match with Club Brugge is more important than the Manchester derby at the weekend. Now, I know what he's getting at, because his backup point to that, so to speak, was he's only really got four games to get enough points on the board in the Champions League to really send his side through to the knockout stages. And we know, because we've drummed it home on a number of times on Football Social Daily, how important the Champions League is to Manchester City. His argument was, we've only got fewer games in the Champions League. If we lose to Manchester United, there's plenty more Premier League games in which we can pick up 3 points along the course of the season. I get his point, but to suggest, even though I get it wasn't exactly directly what he meant, but to suggest that this game against Bruges is more important than the Manchester derby at the weekend, I sometimes wonder why Pep says some of the things he says. You know, the supporters love him. They idolise him. They adore him. They think he's an absolute magician, and he is, but some of the things that comes out of his mouth, I just wonder whether he's better off just saying nothing at all. He got into an argument, into a bit of a quip with the Manchester City Supporters Club a few weeks back. I mean, that's water you don't want to be getting into as a manager, regardless of how successful you are. So I think that any Manchester City fan will tell you, lose or draw to Club Brugge tonight and demolish Manchester United in the derby on Sunday, I'm pretty sure they would choose the Manchester derby at the weekend. There's absolutely no doubt about it. So I get where Pep Guardiola is coming from a managerial perspective. But when it comes to quotes and the way media works now, he shouldn't have said that, really. I get his point, but it's just not a bigger game than the Manchester derby. I think in terms of making changes and things like that, you're right. We came up with a saying on the show, Pep Roulette, because you never know what he's going to do. You know, spin the wheel and see where it lands and what team he picks. He might do something crazy. Obviously, everyone talks about the lack of a striker at the moment. When City win 5-0, it doesn't matter. When they lose to Crystal Palace, why didn't they buy a striker in the summer? It's that age-old back and forth between trying to find an issue with a team and a system, when naturally any football club is going to lose games. The time of Arsenal's Invincibles, that's gone. You don't go a season without losing a game anymore. The quality's too good. So definitely think City will be fine against Bruges tonight, no matter what team they pick. But I disagree with Pep entirely that this game is more important than the Manchester derby. Just don't see how it can be.
Yeah, I fully agree with you now. Not everybody can be invincible. It's tough. It's tough to hold up that mantle. It weighs heavy on your shoulders after a certain amount of time. Manchester City, as we mentioned, Ian, are coming into this on good form. Generally, they've been quite solid. They're not top of the Premier League. That's Chelsea at the moment. But they're right within the running to defend their title. But they did hit a bit of a bump in the road at the weekend against Crystal Palace. And one of the big takeaways for me was that it was really, really kind of stodgy, the performance. They couldn't really get going. Real lack of intensity right the way through the team. And Palace played it to a T. They slowed the game down. Time wasting even before the half-time whistle. Laporte gets sent off. And they just frustrated City at every possible opportunity. Club Brugge, you'd imagine, will probably be a bit more open, even though they are the away side in this. We kind of filed this under a little bit of a bad day at the office during the weekend review show on Sunday night. But Pep Guardiola does need to get a bit of intensity into his players, because they need to shake off that. Because as Niall said, however Pep wants to phrase it, one game is bigger than the other and the derby comes second to Bruges tonight. They do need to get a bit of intensity into them, because we all know that on Saturday they've got a massive, massive game.
Yeah, and they'll be looking to bounce back as well from what was a bad weekend for them too. So they're surely going to be fired up for it. As you say, the probably saving their best work for the weekend ahead. But I think we will see more intensity. I think it was probably a blip, the Palace situation. I can't see that being something that they're wanting to repeat. They won't be taking any chances against Club Bruges because they are going to be a dangerous side. They're in the Champions League after all. They're no slouches. It's not like the Carabao Cup against a League Two side. They're going to have plenty about them. But of course, you know, how can you not have in the back of your mind one of the biggest fixtures of the league season that's coming up? So there will be a mind on that, but I'm sure that they'll be here to get the job done, but also to put right what went wrong a few days ago.
And quickly, before we wrap up, I'm going to throw it across to you both. Niall, call this for us. Comfortable 2 weeks ago in Belgium, 5-1 win. If City win, another big step closer to the last 16. They just need 1 point from their last two games. This should be relatively straightforward.
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be two goals in this, but I can't decide whether it will be a clean sheet for City or not. I think what Pep was saying pre-match is he feels that Club Bruges will have learned from their drubbing last week and they'll be more up for it this week. So with that in mind, I fancy Manchester City to concede maybe once. So I'll go 3-1 Manchester City.
I think it'll be 2-0 Man City. Nothing ridiculous on either end. I think they just want a nice steady performance after last week and, you know, just get through it and get ready for the next match.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think Liverpool will probably edge it at Anfield tonight. So back-to-back Premier League wins for me in the Champions League this week. And obviously building up to that massive game this weekend. Don't listen to what Pep Guardiola's saying. The Manchester derby is going to be a humdinger. Right, we're going to call it there for today's edition of the Football Social Daily. Niall, Ian, as always, thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, Fergal. Thanks, Ian.
Great stuff, guys. And as always, don't forget, if you're a fan of the podcast or if you're a new listener, if you click subscribe, you can get a brand new episode every single day. We are your only daily Premier League podcast, available right the way across the board, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.